If you shift from leaving a legacy to living one, now you have that opportunity to mentor and coach throughout your life. So you're building a legacy and you're living one. And so then you get to actually influence it. You can see the impact of it and you can help to steward it.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello and welcome to the Learn It All podcast. We are Damon Lemby and Darren Bridget. Damon Lemby, CEO of Learn It. Darren Bridget, I'm in charge of the professional development content we create here at Learn It. And we are joined today by Kyle Gabhart.
Howdy.
Howdy. Good job. Not good. That's good. That's how you say it, Kyle.
Darren's been practicing the names.
Kyle is a native Texan, hence the howdy. Father of six. Grandfather of two, a serial entrepreneur, started many different businesses, actively engaged in, we're talking about one book in particular that you've written, but other books. He's designed and licensed a board game, out there doing the public speaking circuit, and is also a managing partner of Bluegrass Legacy Group, which is financial planning. And the book is Legends Don't Retire and Neither Should You. It's right there behind him. Great take on how to think about planning for your future in this with a new approach. And I'll let Kyle get into that. And I don't know if you've noticed, but Damon, I mean, I'll speak for me for sure, but I'm just not a spring chicken anymore. And thinking about things like retirement, I'm pretty happy to have this conversation. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thank you kindly.
I am too. And before Kyle gets to introduce himself, I would also like to say that Kara and I, Kyle's firm, Bluegrass, is our financial planners. And so I'm super excited to have Kyle here today. We're trusting him and he's been great. So thank you, Kyle, for coming on today.
Guys, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm excited to see where the conversation goes.
Me too, because we don't know. We don't plan it out too much. We like to just be in the moment. We're actually going to talk about that, plans versus planning. But first up, we have a question we like to ask folks. Our contestants, number one question. And that is, since we're all about learning and you're talking about really having the mindset of being a lifelong learner, you don't just retire and you can go into still life and stop. You want to keep learning and growing. So what are you still, what's something that you're hoping to learn in the future?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. In fact, this past weekend, I took my boys as well as my son-in-law out to some property that we've got. It's raw land, 12 acres, about an hour and a half outside of town. And we're learning I'm mostly learning. My son-in-law actually already has real skills. I have no skills. So if you need like some really cool tax strategies, I'm your guy.
Yeah.
If you want to figure out some clever ways of organizing your life, so that you can maximize your cash flow and figure out how to achieve your goals, like, I'm totally your guy. But if we mess up the world and it ends up being like the Walking Dead type scenario, I have no real skills.
Yeah.
And correspondingly, my children have no real skills. And so we're using the land as a way to create some memories, but also like actually learn real things. So this past weekend, we built a shed. And it didn't fall over when we were done. And so I now own a chainsaw. The only limbs we cut were the ones attached to trees. So lots of learning and growing happening this past weekend.
Getting back to the land.
Back to the idea.
With a chainsaw, but back to the land. Yes. Good. I like it. Good. Kyle, what's can you give us a little bit of your story? I mean, I just barely skimmed the surface.
You bet.
Yeah, what's the Kyle Gabhart story?
Man, I'm a Pisces. I like long walks on the beach and candlelight dinners. I was born at a young age. And I grew up in the Fort Worth, Dallas Metroplex, youngest of three. My dad was a minister and a marriage and family counselor. So I was really, really blessed to grow up with an environment where communication and emotion were very natural things we talked about. So we would sit around the dinner table and talk about personality profiles and communication styles. I knew what the Myers and Briggs was before I was 10. I wasn't allowed to take it until I was 13. I don't know if this is true or not, but my dad told me I didn't have a personality yet. And so I wasn't allowed to take it until 13. But I knew by then, like, what the different letters meant and how do you analyze the way someone communicates. And so it really gave me an unfair advantage in terms of being able to understand and connect with and engage with other people. And so I'm so grateful to my folks for that upbringing. Also, public speaking was a big deal. I was in debate in high school and college. My senior year of high school, out of 36 weeks in the school year, I went to 33 debate tournaments.
Wow.
And so I got an immense opportunity to practice. How do you craft an argument? How do you articulate an idea? How do you connect with an audience? And I don't care what you go into in your life, that will serve you well everywhere you go. So one message I would have for any parents or grandparents out there, please encourage your kiddos to prioritize public speaking, to prioritize anything around communicating ideas, because it'll get used in every discipline and every walk of life.
Yeah. Oh, so following up on that, and it's a little bit of, I mean, we're going to get into budgeting and planning. Right.
But Darren, before let me stop right here, because this is what Kyle did to me on our first call, which I appreciated. So Kyle, the very first question he asked me out of the bat was, "What are you grateful for?" So I'm gonna flip this on you, Kyle. What are you grateful for today?
I love that question. For a little bit of context for everyone else, this is something that I started at the dinner table 2 years ago in June. It'll be 2 years in June. Every single night. And it's then proceeded into every team meeting and every client meeting and every future client meeting. I start with go big, begin in gratitude. And the question is, what are you grateful for? Early on, when people answer that, they'll tend to give really, you know, broad sweeping. I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for the country I live in. I'm thankful for, you know, the house I have, whatever it might be. But once you get past that surface layer, it's fascinating to see how the layers of that get peeled back and uncovered. So right now, what I'm really grateful for is I'm grateful for technology. Because if it weren't for technology, Damon, you and I would have never met in the way that we were able to. Shane could have connected to us. We could have hopped on a telephone call, but we couldn't have really made the connection that we did. And you and I wouldn't be able to engage on an ongoing basis the way that we have been and serve you the way that we do if it weren't for technology. If it weren't for technology, we wouldn't be able to have this platform right now with both you and Darren, all of us communicating, much less what I'm sure is probably a meaningful percentage of the world, all connected in right now, listening to this, observing this. And there's a lot of things that technology has messed up. But one thing that it has done is equipped us with the capability to connect with folks. And I'm immensely grateful for that.
I love that you say that. Gratitude is underappreciated in terms of how important it is. And I really like too that you're saying you move. It's not to devalue the things that are a big deal. Like I have a new grandson that I'm super grateful for. But those things, once you move past those, I mean, literally even being grateful for the fact that you have a pen, it gets you into a mindset of just deep appreciation all the time.
So true.
Not just reserved for the big things. And that can be a game changer for people. So Kyle, let's talk about what you do a little bit. So for people that are out there, you've started a bunch of business. There's the entrepreneur thing, but even if you're starting a business, having this idea, where am I headed to? Can you talk a little bit about this idea of of legacy, why it matters, and why you should have that mindset moving forwards in your life, and especially with the goal of retirement at the end.
And yeah, and to start with, what is legacy?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I appreciate both of those questions. So I am frequently in the position of speaking to a room. It might be 30 people, it might be 300 people, and I ask the question, when you hear the word legacy, what comes to mind? And if it was Family Feud, by far the number one answer on the board is, it's something you leave behind. Mm-hmm. That's the natural association people have with legacy. And I don't disagree with that. That is an aspect of it. But the problem is that when we frame legacy in terms of something we leave behind, then we hinder our ability to influence it. Right? So imagine you're walking out the proverbial door, you toss your legacy over your shoulder, whatever that might be. Maybe it's money, maybe it's something sentimental, maybe it's something you built or created, whatever constitutes your legacy, your priorities, your values, what have you, you toss it over your shoulder and the next generation is there to catch it. The organizations you care about, maybe family members that are still around, maybe people that you touched in the community, whomever, they're there to catch it. And then they try to figure out, what the heck am I supposed to do with it?
Yeah.
And if you haven't had the opportunity to mentor and coach and pour into them, they don't know what they're supposed to do with it. And they likely bobble it, if not completely drop it. Mm. And if you shift from leaving a legacy to living one, now you have that opportunity to mentor and coach throughout your life. So you're building a legacy and you're living one. So then you can look to that next generation and say, oh, no, what I meant was grip it like this, or no, say it like that. Or I think you may have misunderstood what I was intending with this gift of money or time or skill. And so then you get to actually influence it. You can see the impact of it and you can help to steward it.
That's amazing. That's a really important way, it seems like, to actually approach that idea. Well, let's talk a little bit about money. How do I get more of it? How do I have more of it when I'm actually at that retirement place? And let's just start with some of the brass tacks of planning.
Oh, you bet. So it's really, really easy to double your money. All you have to do is just take it and fold it over, and now it's doubled. Real simple.
All right, good. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that I always aim to remind folks is that money is a magnifier. Mm-hmm. It will magnify whatever is at your core. Hmm. If you are a selfish person, if you are someone who has a scarcity mindset, piles of money won't change that. They'll only magnify it. Hmm. Correspondingly, if you're a generous person, if you have an abundance mindset, money can magnify it. But if at any point you imagine, oh, I'll make substantially different decisions if I just had more money, you'll always be chasing that and pushing that further out. Mm-hmm. Because there's never going to be enough, quite frankly. And it doesn't matter anyway, because we're going to keep printing it as fast as we can in Washington. So you won't be able to keep up with that engine anyway.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it is only going to magnify whatever is at your core. And so you need to look introspectively and make sure that you like what you're in the position to magnify and not see it as a cure-all.
Yeah. It's an interesting approach. It honestly sounds a little bit like approaching helping people manage their money with the background of somebody who was raised in a house by a minister and a man married to a therapist. Like, you're imagine. Looking at, I'm doing that to you, but you're looking at the whole picture. Yeah. Why would you even go down this path with something that feels, you know, like tax laws and things like that? This seems so practical. Right. You seem to have a unique approach. How did you get there?
Oh, goodness. A lot of mistakes. I got there through trial and error, like anyone else. I distinctly remember being 26 and getting greeted at my front door by two uniformed police officers and carted off to jail, and not having enough cash to bail myself out. And so my father had to. And for context, I wasn't a drug runner. I actually made a really healthy six-figure income, but I didn't manage it well.
Yeah.
And the particular issue in this case was I had an expired registration. Mm-hmm. It had eventually on my vehicle, right? It had eventually gone to warrant status. And, you know, being a man in my 20s who was pretty sure that he had the bull by the horns and, you know, knew how life worked, like, ah, they've got better things to do with their time than go serve that warrant. And it turns out that in Coppell, Texas, there is nothing interesting going on and they don't have anything better to do with their time than go drag someone to jail for an expired registration on their vehicle.
Yeah.
And so that was something of a wake up call for me to go, gosh, I'm actually at this point on an annual basis earning more money than my parents,
yeah.
But I can't bail myself out of jail. I can't seem to function enough to pay a ticket that I have. Like, something's got to change.
Yeah.
Hey, it's this reminds me of something I haven't thought about for years. In the 70s, my dad got pulled over for running a stoplight or something, and they actually cuffed and stuffed my dad for unpaid parking tickets that he just forgot he had, which was very traumatic for a kid at 8 years old. So sure. That's a fun memory. Money.
I'm glad I could bring that back for you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm sure as my sisters watch this, my brother would be like, "Oh, good going, Damon." but you know, a lot of times, money and it just seems overwhelming. You know, when it comes to personal budgeting, and I know you have like I think it's 5 strategies. Maybe yeah. That's in your book. Can you where would talk about those 5 a little bit, and also. Where can somebody what is low hanging fruit to just start with? Because for people like me, it's like overwhelming. You know, you have money coming in, money coming out, you're spending. And how do you even track all this?
Yeah, that's so important. I really appreciate you asking it. So the part of the reason that it's important is just to know that there are multiple strategies. And the reason I say that is that most of us can remember a time when we tried to budget and it failed.
Absolutely.
And if not several times we tried to budget and we fell on our face multiple times and we decide, I guess I'm just terrible with money. I guess I'm just irresponsible. I guess I'm just a bad person. And come to find out, maybe it's the fact that you have a variable income because you're commission-based or because you're bonused or because it's hourly and you don't have control over your hours. There's actually in the book a specific strategy for how do I budget when my income isn't exactly the same every single time. Mm-hmm. And so that's freeing to know, oh, so maybe it's not me. Maybe there's just a different approach I need to take than one I've taken in the past. Some people have tried the envelope system. That's one of the things I mention in here. And maybe it worked for you, but whether it did or not, that worked for you. Something else is going to work well for a different person. Probably the most common one, there's a ratio of 50, 30, 20, and it breaks it down into 50% going towards what you actually need. And then you've got another 30% going towards things that you want and 20% going towards paying down debt and or savings and building up the assets. And even there, it's so easy to get a ratio like that and then really force yourself down into that to go, oh, I have to be exactly at these figures, instead of recognizing these are good rules of thumb. Mm-hmm. If you know that that's the high level ratio and you do the assessment and you're at spending 85% on a combination of needs and wants, and you've only got 15% that's left over for being able to address paying down debt, building up assets, that gives you some insight into, oh, so maybe my priorities are askew somewhere because I'm not able to really get any traction or get ahead.
That's good. Given that my wife and I are in our 60s now, should we just give up? when it comes to compound interest.
Yeah. No, it's a valid concern because the power of compound interest is obvious. And there is no doubt, right? The Chinese proverb tells us that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. But then again, the second best time is today. And that's where a lot of the talk and concepts that are woven throughout talk about the value and importance of planning. And planning is something that you can do at any stage. Might it have been beneficial to have made different decisions 10 years ago? Okay. But you learned from those and you are the person you are because of those experiences. The key is to now go, given where I'm at, how do I navigate most effectively with the resources I have and the opportunities in front of me? And if you remove the focus on traditional retirement, and instead, as I like to say, build a life you never want to retire from, then that can free you up to go, okay, I'm going to balance my cash flow with my expenses. I'm going to do it all with a lens towards how can I be living a legacy and investing in the people and the causes that are most important to me and chart out a path for my life where I can make the most effective use of those opportunities in front of me. It doesn't matter if it ends up looking like a traditional retirement or not. You're making better decisions and you're getting more desirable outcomes and ultimately making a greater impact by taking on that planning mentality, regardless of what age you choose to do that.
Yeah.
And Kyle, I was, when I was doing some of my research on working with Bluegrass and on you, you talk a lot about too, you shouldn't look at it like your first year, but how it compounds over 10 years, correct?
Yeah. That's a good call out. So when we typically do anything that resembles planning, it's usually in January. And it's usually in some form of, these are my goals for the year, or these are my resolutions. And so we end up doing all these little bitty plans 1 year at a time. And as we know, you know, within weeks, we're wondering, gosh, why did I sign up for that gym? I'm probably not going back to it. And we're on this, you know, ridiculous Groundhog Day type experience a year at a time. Yeah. Well, to your point, Damon, not only does money compound over time, but so do we as individuals. And so the decisions that you make have the ability and they in fact will stand on top of the decisions you previously made. And that can either go in a healthy direction or an unhealthy direction. So if you decide I'm going to start drinking more water and you get really consistent and really good at drinking more water, then the next time you decide, hey, I'm going to start running, it's going to be easier to run because you're hydrated. And so the second decision is building on the first one and you begin to gain momentum. But the opposite is true. If you decide to slack off in certain areas of your life, that will compound. And so as we look at planning over a 5, 10, 20 year time frame, where you have the ability to get to is orders of magnitude greater than just stacking up a bunch of 1 years next to one another. Because 20 years from now, none of the constraints you're living with right now have to be true. You could live in any part of the world you want to. You could speak any language,
right?
Different skill sets, the whole nine yards. So you can start with a blank slate, and then that informs the decisions you make on a year-by-year basis in alignment with that long-term goal.
I really like the way you talk about this in the book, this idea of planning versus a plan. Yeah. You know, that everybody has a plan to get punched in the face kind of thing. But you really challenge the standard thinking with financial planners when it comes to retirement, that you pick these targets and these numbers, and then you just map everything to those. But that's not the real world. Those things are going to change. They're just made up.
So true.
Yeah. So I mean, true. That's how I read it, but maybe you could elaborate on that point a little bit.
Yeah. Any plan you build, never mind the punch in the mouth, just the natural progression of life, it's going to be out of date the moment you print it.
Yeah.
And yet far too often what we do is we create a plan as a noun, And whether we physically do or conceptually do, we kind of print it, stick it in a binder, put it on the shelf, and we're like, well, I now have the plan. I'm in good shape. And of course, you know, that is only going to be valid for a very limited amount of time.
Yeah.
And you learn every day, hopefully. I don't know if you learn it all.
Yeah.
There you go.
But you do learn every day. And so you're going to make different, ultimately better decisions a month from now, six yeah. months from now, a year and a half from now. Yeah. And so if you stick with a plan that is static versus planning, which is dynamic, you're cutting yourself off at the knees because your future self is going to make way better decisions than your present self will.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because sometimes individuals, you know, they make these plans and they kind of put their stick in the ground, like, you know, I'm right. And they have a hard time admitting when they're wrong and they need to pivot. What advice or what have you been able to do to be able to keep your planning dynamic instead of static?
Ooh, yeah, that's tricky. So part of it is leveraging technology. So if what you do is have the manifestation of the plan come in the form of something like a PDF or a Word document, then that's challenging because that in and of itself is inherently static and you have to physically update it. Now, PDFs, Word documents, narrative is an important component of it because you do need to describe things sometimes. But there's some quantitative elements where you can, through utilizing software, link your accounts, link the various financial pieces of your life into it so that it is ongoing updating for you. And you can get a real-time snapshot of, here's where I'm at today. And given these mortgages, given these pieces of real estate, given this insurance policy, given these bank accounts, given these investment accounts, given all of these pieces, here's how it compounds over time in pursuit of my goals. And then you can start to carve out those goals in alignment with what those underlying elements achieve. So that's part of it. And part of it is you just have to be okay with failure. And I routinely preach to my kids and I preach within my team, fail early, fail often, fail forward. Yeah. And that just has to be something that you embrace and normalize, is that ultimately, if you're not failing, then you're probably not taking enough risks in your life. You got to be pushing the envelope constantly.
When I over the years for decades, when I'm interviewing people or when they first come on board to learn it, one of the things that I always like to say, Kyle, is look, I didn't hire you to get on the train tracks and go in one direction. If you're not making mistakes, because whatever mistakes you're making, as long as they're ethical and you're giving your best, you're not gonna, you know, put us out of business or blow us up.
Right.
But if you're not making any mistakes, I don't want you here. Because yep. I want people who are learning, growing, and are comfortable with failure.
Good.
I don't really think you can scale and have a successful business or successful team if you're not willing to take chances and make mistakes and not have to come to me every time. I love it when individuals on our team come to me and say, hey, Damon, I didn't think about asking you this, so I just went for it, but I want to let you know what we did. I love that, right?
100%.
And if it doesn't work, we could talk through it and learn from that and move forward. But you know, I love what you said is getting comfortable with failure and make it part of the way you go about things.
Love it.
I almost feel like we should do that, Damon. Like check in where you say, what did you do this week? And part of it is like, what mistakes did you make? With the idea that like, hopefully you made some.
I like it.
And not just the same ones you did last week, better ones, you know, make better mistakes.
Love it. And not make the same mistake all the time.
Learn
from that mistake. I always say, keep making mistakes. Just don't make the same mistake all the time. Cause then you're not really learning.
So yep. Kyle, I think I've been tracking everything. I've been taking some notes, but the one thing that I don't have is so how much money do I need to retire?
One more dollar, just okay. One more. I'm fond of saying that retirement is really easy. So here's how it works. You put in your 2 weeks notice. and that's it. You're retired. Like, it is not hard to do.
Yeah.
Staying in retirement. Now, that is the tricky part. Right. But as it turns out, if you're willing to lower your lifestyle enough, you can make it last. So the other way I phrase that is, what flavor of cat food do you prefer? Because if you're willing to go with Fancy Feast, like, you could probably stay retired for a really long time.
Yeah.
By the way, Kyle, your name of the book, your book is Legends Don't Retire and Neither Should You. It's kind of like an anti-retirement. There you go. There's a book. One legend I know who would never retire is my grandfather, Frank E. Lemby.
Yeah.
He went to the office at 5 days short of 101 the day before he passed away.
Wow.
Yeah. He was an anti-retirement. Wow. It kept him alive.
That's epic. Alive. So good.
And he was one guy, but one example of that, but I didn't want to let you off the show without giving you the opportunity to talk about your dad. Cause I think that's one area that you and I bonded is such a strong relationship and learning from our father. So can you tell us the story about your dad?
I'd be thrilled to. So let's see. My father grew up in Kentucky. That's actually the bluegrass in bluegrass. And he was married to my mother for 50 years, which in and of itself, he should have a statue in his honor.
Yeah.
She's a lovely woman. She'll kill you with kindness. And grew up on a tobacco and dairy farm, went uphill both ways in the snow, all that jazz. Met my mother at the University of Kentucky, go Wildcats. And really, his life was all about service. He served in Vietnam. He was a gospel minister for 30 years. He served for 5 years in Child Protective Services. He led a summer camp for youth for 20 years. He was a soccer referee for high school. He gave and gave constantly, whether it was an organization that would need a treasurer or a secretary or something, or, volunteering everywhere you can imagine, marriage and family counseling constantly, just constantly in service. And he retired. And of course, he was still super active, but he left the pulpit. And within a few years, was diagnosed with progressive supranuclear palsy, or PSP. It's a flavor of Parkinson's. And what it does is it robs you of your faculties over time. And so he started shuffling. He eventually needed a walker, and then a weighted walker. And then good days were walker, bad days were wheelchair. And then it was full-blown wheelchair, and then it was catheter, and it was feeding tube. And this was about a 6 to 8 year progression, depending on when you exactly mark the onset of symptoms. And it was brutal. And so, the time came. It was July 2018. He passed August 2018. We were going to have the memorial service. And my sisters and I've got two older sisters. We were texting back and forth, and we have kind of a gallows humor in my family. We'll crack jokes at anything. There's nothing that's safe. And it was raining cats and dogs that day. And one of my sisters sent a text, and it was a quote attributed originally to Harry Truman that says, "No matter how rich or powerful you become, the size of your funeral will pretty much depend on the weather." And, the idea being that as much as you care about this person that you want to pay your respects to, you look outside and it's ugly and you go, honey, do we really need to go? I mean, we could send some flowers. We could send them a card. We'll call the family next week. It'll be fine. Like, everybody comes up with an excuse for why they would need to go. So it's raining cats and dogs. And then you couple that with the fact that dad hasn't been in the pulpit in 11 years. He hasn't really been in a position to go out and build any kind of connection or relationship in 5. And he hasn't been able to talk for over a year. I can scarcely remember anything that happened in my life 6 months ago in terms of conversations I had or you know, things I said or did in people's lives, who's going to actually remember?
Yeah.
It was standing room only.
Yeah.
There were 300 people in the auditorium. They canceled vacations. They came from 6 different states, and it was more in excess of 3 hours was the ceremony, and various people standing up to talk, and person after person shared stories. Let me tell you what Robert Gabhart said to me 25 years ago. Let me tell you what he did in our life 14 years ago. Let me tell you about how I was headed down this path, but for your dad, I then went this direction, and it's impacted my family, and it's impacted the trajectory of my community and everything around me. We were just absolutely blessed and drowned with stories of the impact that he'd made. And it was that day that I realized what legacy actually meant. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what it looked like or how I was going to do it, but I was committed at that point that I was going to begin living a legacy and making an impact in people's lives in the same way that my father had.
Awesome. That's a beautiful story. And when I asked you earlier, what does legacy mean? That's similar to what it means to me. You know, just last week, over the weekend, we have so much stuff. We're trying to get rid of it. So my wife put on next door, or whatever it's called, a bunch of chairs we wanted to sell. And the gentleman who responded said, "Hey, are you Lemby, Walt Lemby?" And she said, "That's my husband's, that's my father-in-law passed away." And he's like, "Oh, I worked with them in the 70s or 80s. I'd love to meet your wow. son when I show up to pick him up." And anyways, so on Sunday, this last Sunday, he showed up to pick up the chairs. And just like with your dad, he shook my hand. And then he told me a story about how my dad impacted his life for the couple of years when he first got it started in real estate. And that's the kind of legacy that I want to be able to leave. Right. And is that after you're gone or even when you're still around, whatever, you know, people can share stories with, in my case, Wally and Lucy and my two children that but what a great impact your father had and my dad as well. So it's so special. Thank you for sharing that story.
My pleasure.
Let's because I don't want to a little bit of a pivot here because we don't want to leave without the opportunity to talk about the board game. And for those of you who are looking online here, you might notice there's a little bit of an apocalyptic thing going on behind Super Kyle here. He's got the apocalyptic board game and the Cybertruck, which is what you'd need to tool around in probably. A little functional but small Cybertruck. What's the board game? How did this come into existence? And
oh man, so there's two versions of that story. One version is I get bored easily and I like to take on new challenges, and so you know I love games. That's kind of my metaphor for life, is that life is a game, and so that's why I designed a board game. The second story that's a little bit more raw is that when I was 29, I was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis, which is a progressive degenerative spinal disease. I went through multiple MDs, multiple MRIs, chiropractors, every shape, form, and fashion I could to try to get relief. Nothing worked. Eventually, an MD gave me the AS diagnosis. I was actually in a wheelchair at the time when that happened. Then at the same time, a close friend from high school passed away from leukemia. And so I was just getting hit left, right, and center. And my outlet that I poured myself into was designing this board game. And Arctic Scavengers has the exact same acronym as ankylosing spondylitis.
Wow, so you did that in your 20s, which were kind of apocalyptic, really. You had a lot of stuff going on in your 20s.
It's true. Yeah. It's a good call.
Yeah, yeah. Good call. And your winning percentage with that game is pretty high, right?
You know, it is mostly because I don't tell everyone all the rules when I'm introducing it. I tell them most of the rules. And then as we go along, I'm like, oh, another thing is.
Good. Yes. Good. Well, I look forward to trying that game out. That sounds exciting. The one other thing that I wanted to come back to that you mentioned in the very beginning, because this idea of debate, I was, you know, we talk about debate and a positive way to do it. Bo Seow was a recent debate champion who wrote a book called Good Arguments. Huh. And in it, he had an interesting premise, which is this idea that you can take what you learn to do in classic debate, which is really about winning. Yeah. But apply some of these lessons in a workplace setting, but you need to do it in a good way. That's the idea of good arguments, because you can't go into work with a goal of like winning the argument. You have to like advance ideas towards better solutions and better problem solving. So can you give some advice to like, how do you create good arguments at work?
It doesn't show in my view, but up on like two more shelves higher than you can see, there is a cartoon cut out from the newspaper that my mother gave me when I was probably 19 or 20. It's about this kid who's in a debate and had just gotten back from it. And the person asked, how did you win the debate? And he goes, well, I made the other person cry. And she thought it was really funny to give that to me, because my very first debate tournament, I had zero class. I was just a brawler, verbally speaking, and I actually did make one of the opponents cry. In that particular tournament, I went undefeated and didn't make it to the elimination rounds because my speaker score was so low. Because I was just knocked down, drag out, any way that I could cut you to pieces, I would.
Yeah.
And I think we embrace that type of mentality too often in the workplace environment in general, irrespective of debate. So I think we've got to back it up to stop viewing our professional lives as competitive and see them as collaborative. And then argumentation, debate, is a means by which we can progress an idea, hopefully get counter ideas, and then ultimately arrive at a better answer. But we've got to be on the same side of the table looking at the problem rather than at opposite sides of the table treating each other as the problem.
That's great. So much of what you talk about is orienting around the right mindset. In the right attitude, whether you're talking about your legacy or your finances or having a good debate or inventing board games, probably too.
Indeed.
A question, as we're wrapping up here, a question we like to ask people at the end. This is a surprise question. Okay, here we go. I like good surprise face. There it is. That's it. So we've gotten to learn a bunch about you during the session. What's something that a lot of people don't know about you that they might find surprising? And yeah, you could consider our audience just met you. So maybe there are some folks out there that do know this about you, but something that a lot of people don't know and that they might find surprising.
You can't use a story about getting thrown in the slammer, because
we already got that.
You've already given that one up.
Yeah. I have. And my autoimmune disorder. I can't mention that one either.
Yeah.
At the age of 19, I received a phenomenal gift that required me to, not exaggerating, endanger life and limb. I went on a mission trip for a month in South Africa and Zimbabwe.
Wow.
And I spent 10 days in the bush in Zimbabwe, traveling with a native translator, backpacking into remote villages, just the two of us, carrying gear on our backs, pitching a tent, sleeping on the ground, eating sudza, which is a staple food. It's kind of like think of like a cornmeal. It's really milly meal is what they call it. But it's a staple food. It's the thing they have every day. And it kind of has the consistency of uncooked bread dough when they're done preparing it.
Okay.
By day three in the bush, the smell of sudsa made me sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
So, but I did have some beef jerky and I did have some instant cream of wheat packets in my gear. So I would have them boil some water for me and I would stir up some cream of wheat and I would eat that sometimes. But yeah, it was absolutely phenomenal. It totally opened my eyes to what is a third world nation really like, the concept of poverty, the concept of community and relationship, and the illusion of self-sufficiency that we have in the West, all was put on display for me at the ripe old age of 19.
That's amazing. Well, if you enjoyed that story, you should read some more in Legends Don't Retire, and neither should you, because that book is chock full of stories and jokes, by the way. A lot of jokes in there, which I also appreciated.
Kyle, I got a couple more questions.
Yeah.
Too, before we finish up with the, you know, how to get a hold of you.
Fire away.
So the first question is going to be, what's one thing you want to leave our audience with, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the second one is, because I think you are such a great storyteller, and I know you really, really like to do public speaking. So the second question is, you know, what's like your target audience and where do you think you'd be really successful audience-wise in like as far as the topic you're speaking about, you know, so sure. that anybody out there who's listening, you know, can consider you as a speaker. So what do you want to leave our audience with?
Yep.
And then what is like your, you know, core idea or home run zone, for lack of a better baseball term, as far as public speaking?
Yeah, no, I appreciate both of those questions, Damon. So in terms of what I would want to leave the audience with, it would really center around this idea of thinking about your legacy and the fact that you are writing it every day. So the days are long, but the years are short. And in my experience, we have a tendency to take something as critical as our legacy and push it off to like someday, you know, I'll get around to when I've got time. And we just kick it down the road and down the road. And we perceive that like some theoretical future version of ourselves is going to have this luxurious amount of time to now be able to deposit into the people and the causes that we care about. And because maybe we don't have a giant pile of money or copious amounts of spare time, we're like, oh, it's not worth doing anything right now. I'll do it later. And so my encouragement would be to get serious about living your legacy now, even if it's a small amount of money, even if it's a small amount of time, even if your opportunity to impact it isn't as great as you'd like to be, don't discount the benefits to yourself and to others by getting intentional with your legacy now. So that would be the message I would leave. In terms of the public speaking piece, gosh, I have spoken to audiences of five, and I've spoken to over 1,000. I was an MC last week for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society Awards ceremony. I've done a lot of after dinner talks. I've done a lot of MC work. But the thing I enjoy the most is when I've got an opportunity to really speak to a group that is motivated to challenge their thinking and interested in making a difference in their lives and the folks around them. And so that could be at a leadership summit. That might be an executive group in a company that's really looking to invest in their people. And actually, at one point, a year and a half ago, it was a group of high schoolers. So it's pretty broad in terms of who I'm willing to speak to, but it's got to be improvers. It's got to be world changers. It's got to be people that aren't just looking to check a box, but truly want to be thoughtful about the impact they're making and how they can increase it.
That's great. And how do those people get in touch with you?
Ooh, wonderful. So the easiest way would be kylegabhart.com. And that's set up kind of a simple landing page that goes to all the things. I do hang out a lot on LinkedIn. And there is a cigar bar near my house here in Keller that I go to quite a bit. So that's another viable option.
Good. So online or just in person, head to the cigar bar and, you know, maybe you'll get lucky. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today. So many things to learn and talk about. Thank you for bringing the stories and the humor. Thank you for bringing your game to this conversation.
You're great, Kyle. Yeah. Super Kyle.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure. You guys make it easy. I appreciate the thoughtfulness of your questions. Yeah. I appreciate your emphasis on learning and having a growth mindset. And we need more of that in the world.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Terrific episode. Talk to you soon.